Hi, Mage fans, this is Terry with Mage the Podcast, and this week's episode is kind of in two parts. The first hour is Victor Kinzer and I discussing issues with the technocracy and other types of technomancy, and kind of a thought experiment we have about how you could use a group of sleepers as kind of a single awakened entity, or how a mage could use a crowd as an instrument. The second part starts at about 54 minutes and is me listing some technomantic crafts that I had made up, from a bureaucratic group who controls a town in Ohio to a set of practitioners making cyborg bodies for their spirit patrons. I'll be running a poll for the next 3 weeks or so, open to all executive producers, that's people who support us in Patreon, and whichever group gets the most votes, I'll write up for a small STV supplement. Link to the poll will be in the show notes, as well as if you would like to join our Patreon and participate. And with that, on with the show. Hi, Mage fans. This is your host, Terry Robinson, with Mage the Podcast. And today, my guest is Victor Kinzer, noted writer for Mage the Ascension, one of the brains behind Walking Away from Arcadia, and all in all, person who thinks good about games and helps me think gooder about them. Victor, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited about this topic that we're going to be talking about today.
I'm super curious to see where it goes. And the topic today is four different titles. I'm not sure where the conversation is going to coalesce. I was talking in the Discord. I'm like, oh, I'm talking to Victor later. And they're like, oh, is there a thread for it? I'm like, I have no idea how it's going to go. So I'm not putting anything out there yet. But the notional topic of discussion is kind of the problem with the technocracy being almost the only technomantic group in Mage. The technocracy is a group that has certainly evolved over time from being bland, violent enforcers of orthodoxy in first edition towards being kind of viewed as a group that thinks itself the hero in second edition, that's doing very legitimate things to defend reality, towards a technocracy that could be played at the end of second edition and into revised, who is also reeling from its own internal issues and has a divide between our original mission is to set free the will of humanity against the darkness versus another group that says the only way we will survive is by cleaving to the vision of our betters. It got additional interpretations in Sorcerer's Crusade. It's now the bad guy with apparently no nuance or exception in Victorian Age. And in M20, at least to me, it is a full-fledged playable group that isn't necessarily wrong, but like every other group has some issues.
I think that summed it up really nicely. The only thing that I would add is your observation about the technocracy being just the bad guys in Victorian is not wrong. And I definitely wrote for them, but the interesting thing about that, in the outline and all the feedback, it's like, look, this is Victorian. We are not going to, A, avoid talking about imperialism, or B, do any, like, sugarcoat imperialism, be honest, critique it, you know, go to town. And I think that's how people wrote. It very much turns the order of reason, the technocracy, as they've just become, into the bad guys, but they're still playable.
Yeah.
And that's... that creates some really interesting dynamics. I am currently running a Victorian technocracy game, and oh man, that's a needle to thread.
The way I often put the technocracy is, I do not want them to win the Ascension War, but if I were to take where the locus of power in the Ascension War is at current, and I moved it one peg towards the technocracy, I would be fine with that. So the thing that I always found interesting about the technocracy is I agree often with their short-term game, but I don't agree with their long-term game. And that very much creates a lot of interesting story potential to me. The technocracy wants your help wiping out these vampires who are killing people in your neighborhood. Maybe I do want them to be monkey wrenched constantly. And other times I'm like, oh wait, they keep the Greys from like abducting people. So that's good. So let's just do a quick overview of that. We can go into more detail as we go. What do you consider to be the problem of the technocracy morally? And if you want to consider it separately as like from a narrative sense, the difficulties with the technocracy.
So morally, I think the problem with the technocracy is pretty both straightforward and weirdly complicated. So straightforward, the problem with the technocracy is they're mages who are winning. And it's made pretty clear when you go through the game that whatever group of mages is winning will turn into horrible authoritarian nightmares. And I think that especially when you look at the Order of Reason in the early days, and they kind of still presented them with the edge of kind of villains, but it's really hard to pitch them as full-on villains in, you know, the Sorcerer's Crusade setting, given everything else that's going on. But then in the contemporary setting, certainly in the Victorian setting as well, you know, they're winning. I don't like the they won framing, but they certainly have the advantage. And as a result, they run roughshod because the powerful will always run roughshod. And I think the thing that's more nuanced, though, is that they really honestly think that they're doing the best by humanity. Certainly some people at the top don't. There's some people at the top that are just full on committed to their own, you know, glut of power. But I tend to think that the average field agent really thinks this is for the best. Like, this horrible bloodsucker in the street, my job is to kill them. I'm the good guy. And, you know, we're making better medicines and we're, you know, creating psychological methods that help people, you know, work through trauma, etc. I could go through all the paradigm. What about that is bad? Even economics, hyper-economics, there's a lot of problems with capitalism, but there are a lot of things that it improved relative to feudalism. And there's, I don't care how anti-capitalist you are, and I'm not super fond of the current makeup of capitalism myself, but it has accomplished a lot of great things as well. And so I think the real moral problem with the technocracy is the ends justify the means, which is a little different from the way they described the mystics being terrible when they were in charge. When you go back to the pre-Order of Reason and the way the mystics were described, which kind of maps to, you know, the church at its worst, et cetera, et cetera, it was a very different might makes right viewpoint. And not that might makes right isn't part of the technocracy again, it certainly is, especially in the upper ranks, but a lot of the technocracy think they're heroes. And it's navigating that delusion that's really interesting. And so I think morally, it's that quagmire and the authoritarianism and the paternalism and being closed off from anyone else's opinion. My problem with them narratively is that that is a lousy description of science. That's a terrible description of science. Like, you certainly get hardcore ideologues. You certainly get, you know, your hardcore technocrats. What the technocracy represents exists. But the game has always kind of had this legacy problem of, it was founded on this very simplistic idea of science versus magic, and science is the bad guys, and magic is the good guys. And that was first edition. And science, when you think about the scientific method, and you think about, you know, being open to new ideas, and the entire reason we still do research is because we want to be wrong. Like, talk to a scientist and ask them, what if you're wrong in specific terms? And like, the glint and excitement in their eye is unmistakable. And I love that. I consume science, like media on YouTube constantly. I work in research administration. I have contact with scientists. And that glint is why I love all of those things. And that is just totally missing from the technocracy. And I don't mind the technocracy existing. I don't mind them being the authoritarian horror show they are, because I think the World of Darkness needs that. My problem is everything below the technocracy line is must be pseudo-mystic. Even the Aetherites and Virtual Adepts are pseudo-mystic. There's all this, like, we're technomancers, but we're pseudo-mystic so we can function in the traditions. And, like, that's fine. Again, I actually like that being represented, but there's this gulf between technomystic and technocrat, where you have non-authoritarian, entirely scientific, technical paradigm, and it's just this great void in the game that needs to be filled. That's my biggest problem with them narratively, is that void doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think the technocracy is asked to do too much. So I think we both feel comfortable saying they're an authoritarian group.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And there are a lot of authoritarian groups in Mage, and every authoritarian group, if it wishes to perpetuate itself, needs to find a justification of why it is in charge. This is where you get the divine rights of kings. This is where you get notions of the inheritability of leadership skills. And then you also get the insidious notion of meritocracy, which interestingly was a word that was invented kind of as an insult before it gained its current meaning. And I think people are kind of realizing that it's like, well, meritocracy depends on agreeing what the good is. And if the good people, quote unquote, get to define that, that also seems really self-perpetuating, while at the same time, they feel that they are immune to the criticisms that came to essentially other authoritarian groups before. To me, the interesting thing the technocracy presents is you have this war between wonder and safety, which was kind of how the technocracy was presented in revised and second edition. The technocracy chose safety, the traditions chose wonder, or more accurately, I guess you could say the marauders chose wonder. And the traditions are trying to say, I think we can have both. They're just doing a really bad job of proving it. To me, in 20th anniversary, kind of the core ideas of the technocracy are, one, humans are capable of making discoveries, and some of those discoveries are injurious. The technocracy believes it should be the entity that chooses which discoveries get to pass on into common understanding. That problems require solutions and often require trade-offs. The technocracy believes it should be the entity that does that calculus and chooses how the trade-offs are distributed. That the attributes to be rewarded are genius, work, and dedication to principles. The technocracy believes it should be able to define what genius is, determine which work is useful, and state which principles one should be dedicated to. And that is kind of what I consider the M20 technocracy's philosophical core to be. Something like that. The problem was I read Technocracy Reloaded in 48 hours for an interview, so every word of it outside of the title completely left my brain within 72 hours. So, audience, if I fundamentally missed something, please correct me. Victor, you tend to think about big setting questions. How does technology and science work to you in the world of darkness when seemingly the laws of reality are malleable?
So for me, I lean pretty heavily on that idea that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And I pretty much treat science as we think of it in the real world as being consensus. I can do an experiment. I can have any old person do an experiment and reproduce it, and it will produce an outcome. And the reality warping stuff isn't truly science. It is manipulation of reality. And I know, you know, the fans have differing views on this. I think a person can do that in any number of ways. So there can be the mage that's just like, I am going to change reality. There can be the hardcore technocrat who is working to further the timeline that says, I am, you know, manipulating reality. There can also be the scientist in the middle who's maybe an orphan. They're awakened. They have what game systems would call spheres, although they don't have any language for that. And they have a paradigm and a set of belief systems, and they're doing a series of experiments. And those experiments, due to the influence of their avatar, which nudges them into direction, creates an output that they then do the work to reproduce. And I have friends who are bench scientists, and they've told me about how hard it is to reproduce and the weird, like, superstitious things they will do at their bench to, like, move a petri dish a certain number of inches and do another thing they did before and they got the result, even though it has nothing to do with anything, to get the freaking result.
Whenever I use my laser cutter at home, for whatever reason, I need to turn it on, leave it on for 2 minutes, turn it back off again, and then turn it on again. And assuming I go through that, I will not get stuck at the boot screen. So,
exactly.
And I absolutely racked my brain trying to come up with a good way of separating science and technology from magic. And I think it is trivial to do in a normative sense that, like, a bunch of people could be like, yeah, this is science, this is magic. But it's really hard to come up, in my opinion, with a rigorous definition, because you can say, well, a mage needs an avatar. And I can say, well, to use this particular device, you need 15 years of training. And some people will master that training and some people won't. Like, if you need to understand category theory to make an advance in a certain field, I would argue that knowledge of that is more esoteric than having an enlightened avatar in some cases. And you could say, well, any human could technically do it. I'm like, well, what do we mean by technically here? Like, it becomes a remarkably difficult, to me, definitional question. The closest I have been able to use is technology, properly distilled, doesn't care what you believe when you're doing it. It is orthopraxic. It wants you to do the thing in a particular way. It doesn't so much care what you believe, and it should theoretically be transferable. There should be a way to get one person to do it, to get another person to do it, preferably in a way that's easier than the first person doing it. And that's kind of all I got. Like, even in my supplement Ascension's Landscape, which thank you everyone who got it, somehow it made Electrum, and it's just me going, so Mage is weird for like 45 pages. I kind of come up with a bunch of versions of science, where one is science is continually up for grabs. Whoever can convince the most people to believe in a particular way, great. Another one is that there are fundamental physical laws, and that regular scientists discover those, and that mages are able to discover meta laws, or another surreality, as it were, that can also operate, that maybe someday human scientists will be able to make their way to. And one I also toy around with is more or less, when a new phenomenon is discovered, the first person to create and propagate an internally consistent explanation for it, that's suddenly how the universe works. So there's this brief moment when a new discovery is made, where there is a scramble to make the model work with what the technocracy wants, and that's what it spends a lot of time doing. But as Victor says, there's a bunch of ways that you can treat it.
I think you're onto something there. I think you expressed part of what I was trying to say a lot more elegantly, and that is, once something is repeatable, once something can be done by a non-awakened person, and if they take the steps, the output will be the same, it ceased to be magic, or hypertech, or, you know, whatever paradigmatic frame you want to use, and it's become science. It's become reality. And I'm going to get weird and esoteric here for a moment. There's this concept in the Kabbalah called the four worlds. And I don't remember all the names of them, but the top world is just like totally incoherent, every little thing that could ever possibly be, only barely connected. And then, like, the world below that is when those things start to come together into an idea. Like, there's a solid idea there. It's in your imagination. You maybe can't express it yet. And then the world below that is the idea has form. It's come together. It could be reproduced. You could design it. You could communicate it clearly to another person. But, like, it isn't implemented. You haven't really done a thing. And then the final world is the world in reality, manifestation. Say, if the idea we're talking about is a design for an invention, the fourth world is I've made the invention. And I think about magic kind of in those four stages, where the fight is to take that thing you can do as a mage, that idea that you can just pull out randomly from that top world, you can improvise reality and make it work, and drag it all the way down to that fourth world where you could hand it to a sleeper and then they can do it. And then it's science.
Because we don't get an indication that any other group has gone through that process. Like, we don't get information that when the Hermetics were top dog, that everyday people had the ability to brew potions or something like that. And we don't get information that when the Celestial Choir was chorus were top dogs, that they taught basic prayers that functionally dispelled vampires or anything like that, which, as an aside, I would love to see that. But yeah, I think that's a great framework.
Yeah, I think if you go far enough back, like way before the choristers or the hermetics, and you think about the things that show up in myths, that you did certain things so the fairies wouldn't take you away, or I think there's a model in our history where maybe some of what we think of as magic was reproducible, but there wasn't a lot of that in the Dark Ages. There wasn't a lot of that in kind of the part of history that the world of darkness really seems to care about. And I almost feel like there's an interesting story there on, like, how did that stop?
Yeah, that would be a fascinating story on the way in which the world broke, that those folk correspondences stopped working. Because now we only get them, even the Dark Ages and forward, we only get them in very small things, like werewolves are vulnerable to silver, but that exists within their thing. Changelings are injured by cold iron. And if it does affect you, it is because you have the Echo's flaw. Or I can't remember what the system was in Dark Ages Fae, which is a fascinating game. One day I will read, I swear you. But yeah, the only time it comes up is kind of as this weird throwback glitch, and something that posited why that connection broke, I think would be pretty fascinating. in the World of Darkness, the way it is written, you kind of have to tie authoritarianism and science together if you believe the only way to make science work is to force everyone to do everything the same way. And the moment you loosen that assumption, you can get a bunch of interesting things. But to me, though, one of the other things, though, is the technocracy does a bunch of useful stuff, for lack of a better term. And if you get rid of or change the technocracy, you have to kind of fill in that gap. For instance, the technocracy overlooks human science. And if you wanted to, you could have another group that kind of created a grand ethics committee that investigated that, or an institutional review board, as it were. Nick Bostrom has the idea that every year the IQ required to kill off humanity drops slightly. And it would probably make sense to have a group in Mage take care of that. They tend to keep supernatural agents in check. If you look at Storyteller's Handbook, you had a group called the Ministry of Swords, which oversaw all the supernatural stuff in the UK, and that didn't posit a technocracy. Few things can generate crossover between factions faster than, like, oh, Black Spiral Dancers or Sabbat Vampires. And kind of the last one is protecting humanity from weird things out there. You could have sleeper governments take care of that, or maybe there are just more aliens, or maybe there is another horizon past Pluto that keeps Cthulhu out, or something else, or that there are great wards that deal with that. Do you have any ideas on how, if we get rid of or change the technocracy, we have those basic roles covered in a Mage game?
Yeah, I can definitely think of places for that. I think there are a lot of other factions in the world of Mage that kind of fit that mold. So in terms of, you know, going out and killing deviants, as it were, even though a non-technocrat probably wouldn't call them a deviant, the Euthanatoi certainly come to mind. Who needs the good death quite like a vampire? And there's also definitely space for ghost hunters and the concept of the Aetherites. I mean, that's a gimme. There's a lot of room for that, actually. There's a lot of room for, I think, tradition mages who would consider a lot of the supernaturals out there to be completely unacceptable. I mean, how many mages actually think vampires are okay? That is a tiny sliver. How many mages would actually think your average unseely, you know, glamour-sucking fairy is okay? That's a tiny, tiny sliver. I think the impulse to protect humans would be baked in because mages are ultimately humans. I mean, I've always liked the mage model that they are more human than human, that all the impulses that make us people aren't diminished the way they are with a lot of the other supernaturals, but they're like amped up to 20, and it's a problem with mages. So in terms of creating things, if you look at the Children of Knowledge and the creation of LSD, you know, to kind of step out of the World of Darkness and just talk real world research, there are a lot of positive things LSD has been proven to potentially do, and research on it was shut down. And it needs to be controlled to do those things. Like, randomly taking LSD does not have those positive effects. But, like, there's leeway there. And, you know, through the World of Darkness lens, the technocracy said, no, absolutely not. I think if you were to get rid of the technocracy, there are some spaces for that. I don't love the idea of getting rid of the technocracy, though, because I think they're needed to represent our world. I just want the people that are trying to change the world for the better systematically, where that's their paradigm for working magic, as it were, but they're not authoritarians. You know, the people who are working hyper-economics to find an alternative to capitalism, the people that are, you know, pushing research into LSD and mushrooms as a way, you know, to find ways to do treatments for certain mental illnesses, and they don't tell people just go out and do these things because they know that's terrible, but they're trying to shift things away from the direction that the authoritarian group clearly wants to go and having that fight. I just want space for those people who are like, I am against the technocratic mission. I am not a member, but neither do I want to sell snake oil.
So what differentiates then, for instance, the groups you want to see from, let's say, the Children of Knowledge? Or a more biologically inclined member of the Sisters of Hippolyta? Is there something that you feel this other group needs to have, or maybe a few options of what this other group needs to have?
When Occupy was happening, I had just moved to Chicago, and I went down to an Occupy meeting, and I saw firsthand the ways of gathering consensus on issues, the way they ran meetings in an entirely sort of non-hierarchical way. There was a person running the meeting. He really didn't have control. It was just like, hey, I am helping to facilitate as a servant to this group. And I saw all of that, and it struck me immediately how everyone was talking about, oh, Occupy isn't doing anything, they're not accomplishing anything, we can't get them to run for office, what's going on? And it struck me that all they were really doing was kind of testing, hey, are there other ways to organize these things? And a lot of their ideas did percolate out. And I don't like the idea of them being a persistent group, but I really like the idea that Occupy was maybe a bunch of people on the edge of awakening, maybe a handful of orphans who had awakened, didn't have anyone to train them, so they didn't really know what that meant. Or maybe even just a bunch of partially active avatars all in a similar trajectory coming together, and you get an emergent phenomenon that in terms of its impact on reality was the same as a mage or a group of mages working. And maybe they disseminate out, and individually, when it's all done, they're not awakened and they don't continue to do workings. But like, that was true magic. And I like the idea of these emergent moments where you're at a turning point and things like that happen, because we see those moments in our real world. And there's a whole argument, like in story, of is that paradox? You know, were all those people brought to the edge of awakening because it was statistical inevitability from overreach from the syndicate? Would they have done it anyway? I don't really want to answer those questions, but I like the idea of mages in world asking them and fighting to find the answer, hoping it's the one that makes them comfortable. And I feel like there's a lot of interesting space for purely, we'll call it technical paradigm, non-mystic paradigm, that is just strongly opposed to the goals of the Union, manifesting in those sorts of moments. And maybe a couple people do leave that experience truly awakening and they continue on and do other work. I want to explore that space.
The thing you bring up, we actually got some information on something kind of similar-ish to it before in the Marauder section. We had the idea of confluxes, which are whenever a bunch of Marauders get together, their avatars kind of trade notes, friends and enemies lists, and suddenly one Marauder may have an extra 2 dots in allies or a sudden leveling up of a sphere or something like that. And I love the idea of other groups kind of doing that as another way of doing magic. So if you have a group of people that can seemingly do some sort of collective magic thing, but there's no single individual who is talking to a single thing called an avatar, is it still awakened? I'm going to say yes. It feels to me like it does replace a bunch of the metaphysical questions of mage, because it's the game oftentimes is about what can a person do and what is that conversation with the self look like. But you're just positing, okay, instead of a person, it's a group. What do you think things like focus and magic then look like in that world? Like, if you have that group that is able to come together and do magic, even though no single member is awakened.
I think it's belief by consensus. And consensus in mage means a specific thing. I mean specifically within this self-emergent group. So there's this idea of decision-making by consensus, which was definitely part of the way Occupy organized. It's also a big part of a lot of the, what would a completely anarchist society look like? A lot of them will say, oh, all the decision-making is by consensus. The reality is that's a high bar. Getting that to work in perpetuity, question mark, is that possible? But it can work for a while. And I think paradigm becomes emergent from the collective belief of the group. So I'll sort of think of a magnet. So a magnet exists not because there's any kind of special energy in the magnet, but because the energy that's intrinsic to every particle that makes up the magnet is aligned in the same direction. And it might not be perfectly aligned, but the aggregate is primarily pointing in one direction, so you get a north pole and a south pole along that direction. And there are lots of things in nature that sort of follow that idea that there are a bunch of random things, and then there's a moment where they all move in concert. You know, a flock of starlings is a good biological example. And I think paradigm and practice become emergent based on the alignment of beliefs of all the people in the moment that collectively, even if they're not individually awakened, can have the same anthropic force for the people who love the Void Engineers as a single or maybe a smaller group of awakened avatars. And that alignment might not last forever. That could be ephemeral, or it could be stable, and that might be terrifying or wondrous. I feel like there's a lot of space there because those people aren't going to be in on the joke. They don't know about the spheres. They don't know about magic. They don't have all of the like meta knowledge that we tend to give our characters. And so they're likely to be just deviating from reality a bit towards the neo-pagan, you know, working in a techno paradigm, but differently than what the Union wants, a purely socialist society, and manifesting a way to produce that is an entirely technical paradigm. There's no mysticism there, but it's perfectly opposed to the Union. What does that look like as an instrument? You know, what does that magic look like? Where is its place in the world of darkness, even if that place isn't with someone who's winning at the moment? And I think a lot of that could show up in these sort of self-emergent collective workings.
So if you're playing a character, are you the group, or are you the leader of the group, or a member? How do you see this actually? Is this something that you would just consider to be a tool for storytellers, or is this something that you play?
I'll sort of describe from, I think, the easiest use of this to the most difficult. I think the easiest use of this is definitely storytellers. So you've got a bunch of mage PCs that are, they're in on the joke, they know how it works, they fought the technocracy, and then there's this thing happening. And how do I fight that? And I think that's a really interesting story. A slightly more challenging, but I still think approachable use for this is I'm playing a PC who's awakened, and the fact that I got caught up in one of these self-emergent belief storms is what awakened me. I awakened in the process of being in this and came out the other side and started to actually put the pieces together, and now I'm in on the joke. I think playing someone in the middle of this would be tricky. I think that's probably the most challenging angle. And what could be really interesting there, and this gets into, I wish that empty space were more developed. I think if we had a book, like we have Sorcerer, the book, we have multiple editions of it. That's great. That's the mystical extraordinary citizen. I wish we had an extraordinary citizen book. And I wish that extraordinary citizen book included people who weren't in the Union, but had all of the things that make a sorcerer, or an extraordinary citizen, but their belief that gives them their magic, not with a K, and technological in nature, was such that they could do these sorts of things. I think to fully represent this idea, we'd need some more crunch. Like, we need some more rules. I don't think the tool set exists.
I could certainly see having an extra background that kind of reflected this, and I could be a character that were a community organizer for something like that, and suddenly Prime is replaced with Primal Utility, which is my ability to harness energy from a group having shared purpose. And on the secondary character sheet, my community group has three dots of entropy or something like that, where by getting the entire group to work together, we are able to kind of wear down an object more or less metaphysically by not actually doing anything related to it, but by choosing not to clean up the park that's nearby or something like that. And that I suddenly have dots of cult built in, and that for a few spheres, my community group may be a unique focus. And suddenly I can do very big rituals, but I am incapable of acting more or less in the moment. And I feel like a lot of this could happen very naturally for the mind sphere and certain large scale, like say life effects or something like that. What are some magical effects you would see out the other side of a mage that was part of or able to steer a semi-awakened group of mortals, a group of, let's just call them the actualized or something like that, were able to kind of steer one of these groups that had a self-organizing consensus? You proposed in a previous episode that primal utility as a sphere, that you could disrupt a business operation by interrupting the primal utility flow to it. Is that an effect that you see Occupy able to do, that it has three dots of primal utility and is able to disrupt the quintessence flow to a business that it believes is unfair or unjust or that they don't like?
Yes, I think absolutely. I think a good example sort of in that line is the current labor shortage. You know, we've heard a lot of talk about everybody's leaving, you know, everyone's leaving their jobs because this pandemic happened. There's sort of a little unintentional, maybe society-wide, I won't say awakening, that's a little strong, but maybe like fluttering of the eyes, where you're kind of getting some light in instead of being totally asleep on this subject, being like, hey, I don't need to do this anymore. Maybe I'm just going to go do something else. And people doing that in mass has created this aggregate effect that we can point to and say, this supply chain is disrupted. These restaurants can't do these XYZ things we took for granted. I think another good example of that, and this is a little more concrete and organized, a little less self-emergent, but we suddenly have this rush of strikes to stay on the labor theme. There are three major strikes getting ready to kick off right now. The entertainment industry one, there's one for Deere, the tractor manufacturer, and then Kellogg. We just had one with Nabisco. There was one a couple weeks before that that I now forget. It wasn't Nabisco, it was another snack maker, but more savory snacks, Doritos type things. And it's just boom, 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 boom. And yeah, the unions were all already organized. And so on one hand, you can say, oh, well, that's not self-emergent, but we haven't had those kind of strikes in decades. But now all these separate organizations are doing the same thing. Now, in a purely mage world, they'd probably all be part of the same group convention, whatever. But really, like, if we think about taking inspiration from the real world, that's kind of a self-emergent trend. So I think of it as like the avatar of society, or one of the avatars of society pushing us to do a thing. And then instead of just one person.
So it sounds pretty easy, like you've come up with good ways to represent a lot of mind effects, being able to influence the thoughtscape of a large group. Entropy 5, the idea of destroying or eroding a thought that another person has, seems like a pretty easy thing to kind of represent in this mass action world. Primal utility, even more so than prime, seems to be one. I think you could probably get away with certain time effects as well, and just kind of using the collective will of a crowd as a divination tool, or as a way to create the future they are trying to predict through mass action. I think also spirit becomes kind of an easy one. I can certainly see a large organized group very easily influencing the penumbra and possibly beyond, or even thinning the gauntlet to the point where some of its members or your characters are able to move across. Do you have any thoughts on how to do life forces matter correspondence, I guess?
Yeah, I think those are definitely harder, but I don't think they're impossible. So the one thing that comes to mind, so climate change is on everybody's mind, and there are all of these melting of the ice caps. And there is something to be said for suddenly there being this society-wide push to reverse that, to make that not happen. Now, you know, that's clearly the technocracy at work. I mean, as much as, cool, the technocracies are the bad guys, they're authoritarian, they're also interested in protecting humanity. I don't think it's much of a stretch to say all the centralized, organized work is definitely the technocracy. But I also think if you go out on YouTube, and there are a lot of examples, especially big in Australia, of the idea of permaculture. And, you know, you do these things in this way on this land. You don't plant all the things that grow, but you do these things and there are secondary effects where the entire holistic ecosystem comes back. And I could very easily see a collective version of that where it turns into, on a particular island or in a particular province, you know, convincing everyone to sort of change the way they do certain things, and suddenly streams are flowing again, and suddenly wildlife is back, and there's a mundane explanation for it, but really maybe that stuff manifested out of quintessence in the world of darkness, because you did these things and everyone collectively believed in it. A lot of the discrete I'm going to do a spell and this thing is going to appear. This model isn't good for that. It's good for bigger, longer term societal things. And so I do think like that would be a life effect. That might be a matter effect, you know, regrowing the ice in a particular area, suddenly having the land just suck carbon out of the world because I move my cows a certain way, and that spreading and being emergent.
And this feels like a paradigm that is profoundly coincidental. I like the idea, though, that it's one of those things that as your sphere mastery increases, rather than doing bigger effects, it actually allows you to do smaller effects where you need mind one will let you influence a large crowd very slightly if there are thousands of people, but you need mind five in this alternative contrivance to quickly convince an individual person that you have a fake that your fake ID is real or something like that, kind of this weird turning it on its head. But now I get a better idea for what you're saying. We don't have the systems for it. We don't have good systems for very large scale effects being done very slowly by a large group of people. But that seems like it should be something that is the bread and butter of Mage. Do you know any books that have a good system in them in the old World of Darkness for having things like political agendas and making changes that way?
I definitely think there was an attempt at that in Changeling with the political impulses. I certainly think there's some of that in Exalted. There are definitely like charms, and especially the way the fair folk and some of the more politically aligned exalts worked got into this territory. It was a little more immediate because it was meant to be accessible and very playable, but the themes and the scale and the ideas were all definitely there and more approachable.
The agenda system that we got in Changeling, the venture system that we're getting in Exalted Essence, which is basically a case of the closest example that we have to that in Mage as it exists is kind of the data sphere as presented in New World Order Revised, which basically said as your sphere level increased in data, the amount of time that you can that between roles towards this effect decreases. The amount of successes you need for it to happen decreases. The degree of specificity and control in the inputs you have can become more vague as your level of mastery increases. To me, would kind of be my starting framework if someone wanted to run with that. Do you think to have this exist in your game, this is something that you would want a character build a character for? Or do you think this is a system that a mage could tap? Like, would this need to be tied specifically to a paradigm? Or is this just another tool in every mage's toolbox and not everyone's gonna pick it up and use it?
I definitely think this isn't something everyone would pick up and use. And I wouldn't want it to be. But I do think doing societal working as a paradigm, working with groups, inspiring cults to have some agency of their own, which is, I think, a little different from the way the cult background works. Like, the cult background, as it's written, is you get extra dice on your magical actions because you get them to cooperate with your ritual. It's very concrete. I do think you could have a character who has, like, an alternate version of the cult background, which is more, I inspire you to action. You are part of the instrument, but also a cult, also a working. And I think you'd need to accept some unreliability in output. Like, if you're just controlling them, it just turns into the technocracy again. I think playing chaos theory, playing an instrument as opposed to controlling a machine, there is some room for mages who choose to engage this way. I think playing one of the members of the emergent entity is the thing that we'd need a whole new book for. Like, I don't think we have the tools to finish that thought experiment, but definitely as a potential enemy that you're dealing with all these people that are clearly not awakened, but somehow these magical effects that are following them and you can't find the mage that cast them. I think it's a really interesting mystery for a lot of players, and certainly would confound the heck out of the technocratic union. Sprinkle a little bit of paradox on top, and I think you have an interesting tool narratively that the players have some interface points with. It would take a lot more development to just be a totally standalone idea.
Yeah, but it seems like we have enough of an outline that it could be something that could be used in games at that one or two session level, at least, which is generally my minimum viable concept for an episode. And you brought up a really interesting thing. Like, one, we can make the cult background fuzzier and say, instead of saying three dots of cult are three additional dice on your pool, it's something where you make a charisma plus expression role, and cult is a difficulty modifier, and suddenly, maybe with a particularly good role, with a cult background, you would have had 35 reliable people at the Tuesday night ritual, but suddenly with a slightly rejiggered version of it, you're able to assemble a flash mob, but other times it's simply going to fail, or you're in a community where you don't have reach, where you're stuck on a subway car that's not going to do any good for you, or you're out in the boonies and that's just not where your group is, and suddenly we have a slightly modified version of that background that could easily reflect this. What does paradox look like for an effect like this?
Paradox for an effect like this, and full disclosure, I do not use the paradox rules as written. I mostly follow the system, but a lot of the just like explode in your face, do damage, you know, crazy things happen. I don't tend to do that. I tend to have some discrete narrative negative thing happen relative to how much paradox burned off. I just find that to be a lot more interesting and a lot more in line with how paradox is described in the fiction as opposed to the way the systems are written. I think the paradox for this would be losing control a little bit. So I'm engaging with this. I have a maybe a major paradox backlash. And kind of that problem of charisma. I have this charisma, I've motivated these people, and now they're like activated and doing a thing. Oh God, I wish you wouldn't do that. And like, I can't stop them now. And all of those unintentional things, but they are all done by your kind of fuzzy cult, if it's a full-on paradox effect. And I would probably lock the cult off from mind effects, as long as they are in a paradox storm. Like, nope. In the same way you can't change a paradox effect because it's your spheres can't do that, you have no control over these people for the next, I don't know, depending on the intensity, maybe day, maybe week, maybe month or two, maybe permanent if it's a bad enough backlash. I mean, I like a softer version of that where if we make cult fuzzy and you're using your cult for working and you're like, okay, I will accept some unreliable results in exchange for more power. And maybe you get to, let's go on the high end and double your cult value in terms of the number of Arete dice you roll, but to pull something from V5, they're cult dice now. And if you roll tens or ones or certain things and it's on the cult dice, it warps the magic. And yeah, maybe I can get seven successes this way. And so cool, I get the scale I want, but there's something I wasn't planning on that's maybe not as bad as paradox. I wouldn't want this to like totally throw us into paradox territory again. I think that could be interesting, but I think if it happened with paradox, it should be extreme. And maybe they just break off and become their own self-emergent perpetuating entity that you then have to deal with, which is a very technocracy paradox effect problem that I would love some non-technocratic mages to have to deal with.
So let's walk this through an example. My characters are trying to protect a node that was on a piece of public property that was then purchased for mineral rights. We do a Entropy 5 effect to destroy the notion of allowing this initiative that's being done as a ballot initiative to sell 200,000 acres of public land to pay off debt. Or something like that, or to pay off bonds that my state has accumulated. I have my cult, I do my Entropy 5 effect, I get a big old dice, and I get a messy critical on that, to use the V5 term. I get a bunch of zeros on my cult dice, meaning it succeeded, but maybe a little bit too well. What does that look like to you?
I think that could look like you did this thing, you did a working to destroy this idea of the legitimacy of selling your land, and then suddenly you're seen, and you suddenly have to deal with all of these not quite awakened people coming to you and wanting inspiration. I mean, the easy route out here is all the problems of becoming famous when you really don't have time for that and you don't want that. I think that's one very easy route to go, just off the top of my head. I think another potential, you know, and I'm thinking this through the lens of like all these people are activated and you maybe activate other people that see or are influenced by it. Maybe you really upset some people and you attract some radicals and they start to attack your land and blow things up and sabotage it. And you suddenly have to deal with that, maybe not forever, but for a few months. Or it attracts some werewolves that think you're going to be a great ally in the protection of the land. And maybe, you know, you do want to protect the land and do all these things, and they show up and you're like, yes, I'll have power, I'll have these great allies. And then you end up dealing with all the problems of working with Garu. And they frenzy for the first time. You're like, oh God, what have I gotten myself into? I think there are a lot of ways that messy critical could manifest, where like you absolutely stop the thing you were targeting, but now you got a whole new thing.
So just to explain how this system works, Victor is positing that with this cult background, when I make my Arete roll, I have a bunch of extra special dice. And unlike normal botches and normal crits, if I get at least 2 zeros in my pool, and if at least one of those zeros is on one of my cult dice, I get what's called a messy critical. Each of those zeros is now worth 2 successes, but I get what I want, but in a way that is messy or complicated. The flip side of that, of a bestial failure, is if I roll no successes and I get at least a 1 on one of the cult die, that is when something bad pertaining to the cult happens. What do you think a bestial failure with a cult would look like in this example?
I think a bestial failure, well, I'll go through just a couple effects off the top of my head. I could see a bestial failure, one potential being it goes so horribly wrong and you push them too hard and maybe something happens and a handful of your cult members are suddenly like, this is an abusive relationship, I'm in a cult. And they leave and boom, you've lost a dot of cult. I'm touchy about taking stats away from a character sheet, so I would understand if people don't love that option, but it's thematic and it does really happen in a cult. Maybe if the players were on board with that being a possibility, I'd want to clear that with them first.
Yeah, or you lose a couple of dice for 6 months until word of mouth gets around and the movement refills itself.
Yeah, you could scale that based on your comfort with the sacredness of experience, and I think that's reasonable, but some version of you lose cult members. The other possibilities there are that maybe you attract the wrong kind of cult members. Like, it didn't work, and some of the members of your cult suddenly get overzealous and are like, we just need more people, and they get laser focused, and they pull in a bunch of the wrong sort. Maybe they're dangerous, maybe they're not in alignment with paradigm, and they disrupt the cohesion of your cult for a while. Maybe they actually, you know, reveal you to an enemy, maybe not directly, but through the cult. I think there are a lot of possibilities there. There's also always the possibility, if it's bad enough, that you actually have a sort of paradox-like effect happen. I think if it's one, okay. But if you get like a multiple ones on your cult kind of botch situation, maybe you get a little extreme, and it, because there is the potential that that means a botch on the magic roll, and then you can go full paradox and weird spirits manifest and your minerals start corroding. And, you know, I think you can have direct magical output as well, just depending on the nature of the working.
And one of those things, when you're working with a group, you only need one person maybe to see it, and then suddenly rumors start spreading. And even though it is a paradox manifestation, it may change as it goes through. Did you hear what happened at the demonstration? So on and so forth. I heard they were giving out bad stuff or something like that. And suddenly we have a supernatural manifestation of paradox that also looks like it is coincidental, but also still has the paradox effect that you want. So that's a nice thing.
Absolutely.
Do you have any thoughts on any other types of technocratic groups? Like, for instance, we don't really have technocratic crafts. Why don't you think we have any of those, if you have any thoughts on that?
I think there was a really solid attempt to at least fill in technomantic crafts in M20. And I mean, if I take M20 out and I go back to where we were in second edition and revised, that unexplored space was a lot larger. It was like mystic on one end and the technocratic union on the other end and the virtual adepts and etherites as exceptions to that rule. And I think that empty space was filled in really nicely in M20. I mean, so I think that's awesome. I think part of the reason we don't have any purely technocratic crafts is, you know, M20 had a mission statement to be the love letter of the previous editions. it didn't have the leeway to create whole new things. And, you know, I think it took us through second edition and revised, and then in that, like, quiet period where Mage wasn't being published, to kind of look back at the first edition foundation and go, was that a great foundation? Like, is that where we want to be? And so I think M20, if it had gone all the way to just like, boom, 100% technocratic crafts that aren't part of the technocracy, I think it probably would have been too much too soon, too much of a change for the mission statement. So I think in terms of why we don't have them, that's why. Just where we started from and how long it takes to make an organic journey. I think there's room for that in M5. You know, whenever we get to M5, I think should Paradox decide they wanted to take another step down that path, I think the fan base is primed for it now. Or if we were able to get a little bit of leeway to do some new stuff, you know, now that we're a little farther into the M20 line, I think they could be introduced there as well. And again, like enough people have been thinking about this and thinking about the changes in M20 and taking the next step in their head that I think they'd be ready for it.
When you and I were originally talking, we were talking about, hey, what other technocratic groups you can be and what can they look like? I came up with a bunch of technomantic crafts. I am then going to run a poll for all of our patrons who will pick one, and I will do a proper 4-page Storyteller Vault write-up on that group, or at least try really hard to. So if you have considerable thoughts, air it on our Discord. Formal votes will be through our Patreon. The first group I have are called the Exemplaries. This is a group of technomancers who are using magic to become charismatic and persuasive leaders. They generally focus on life, data, time, and mind. Their goal is to get into mortal positions of power directly and work subtle magics with very complicated system dynamics. They have two factions, the Murphys and the Candides. The former attempt to remove worst actors from kind of the game of civilization, while the latter is trying to drag humanity forward. They do not yet have a notion of who the technocracy or the Nafandi are, but they kind of have an inkling of it. They have considerable power. They have taken over a county in Ohio, and they have a preternaturally effective government and bureaucracy in that area, and kind of their signature effect is something called the Resilient City, which is a prime and entropy rote that acts as latent counter magic against effects that disrupt the operation of their city. So if you're a mage and you're running from the cops and you try and do the effect to cause a sewer grate to explode off or something like that, since that would disrupt the bus schedule, they have this large effect that has kind of latent counter dice against it. They themselves are largely immune because they know how to intercede in such a way as to not disrupt the operation of their city. But this is basically a group that is geared around effectively running urban centers. Victor, how boring do you think that is?
I don't know that I would necessarily want to play this group as a PC, but the thing I couldn't help but think of as you were reading it was Hot Fuzz. And I just want their like catchphrase to be the greater good. Like
for the good of the community, yeah.
Yes, for the good of the community. I mean, I love this group as they're kind of a stand-in for the technocracy. There are some similar themes, but I like them for a very, very street-level game. You know, I've seen a lot of people, you know, give advice for early mage games where it's like, do not bring up the canon. Like if you could hide even the Council of Nine, do it. Just get people used to the idea of like mage. And I love this group as you're playing totally street level mages. You're maybe orphans, maybe one fringe craft member. You don't know anything about the Ascension War, but you want to tap those, you know, freedom versus order themes. And this is the group you're fighting in your tiny little playground. And I think that plays out perfectly for the sorts of games I've seen people suggest, you know, players or storytellers start with, while keeping all those themes that then become harder if you throw the technocracy out. I love them.
My second one is I'm calling the Cult of Techni. These are libertarian material scientists, because it seemed like appropriate to have non-Nafondic libertarian technomancers out there. Their fundamental belief is that we have next level technologies that are out there, but people are just not moving fast enough to adopt them. That you could have a carbon fiber electric car with a gallium nitride distributed hypercharger network, and we could all be, we wouldn't even need mass transit, but we would all have these cars that got functionally 400 miles to the gallon, but people just aren't putting the money, and there are too many embedded interests stopping it, and their goal is to disrupt that. They fund themselves by more or less selling trinkets to the powerful. I know that there are people out there that would pay $60,000 for an athletic, breathable shirt that were also bulletproof and never required cleaning. The rich spend money on some wacky stuff. Their goal is quite simply to upgrade the built world. They believe that governments are failing to respond to issues like climate change, so they are on the front line of researching materials to invest in seawalls. So whereas the technocracy wants to co-opt government, the cult of techni wants to completely front-end it. They are very pro-market. They believe that government intrusion causes issues. And they quite simply just point at the 20th century, at the any number of displaced persons problems or genocides that occurred because the state had accrued too much power and people more or less agreed with them. And the group is largely composed of people who survived the genocides of the 20th century. Their signature effect is something called nodal fixing, which is an extended prime 5 plus pattern sphere ability that has the ability to change a node into something that produces TAS of a particular resonance. They do this by performing a remarkably detailed assessment of the site, and they have the ability to more or less render your sacred grove into something that just happens to produce TAS that is very well inclined towards producing maybe primium, which might be completely useless to you. Libertarian material scientist, Victor, what do you think of the cult of techni?
I also really like them. I like them, and I was thinking about, you know, how I'd use them in a game. They strike me as the very independent renegade arms dealers that will sell to all sides. So again, they have a little bit of like a syndicate flavor to them, but whereas the syndicate sells free market, but really they're in league with the NWO, I like the idea of this group as being like, nope, we are true free market, forget the authoritarianism entirely, and as a result, because we believe you deserve to do what you want to do, we will absolutely sell weapons to the traditions. And suddenly, there's a whole potential opened up for members of the traditions that are maybe willing to be technomantic. And, you know, especially if you dig into the groups, there are more technomancers than just the two groups. There are technomancers among the hermetics. There are technomancer-flavored fringes of several of the traditions. But they might not be able to produce this kind of upgraded tech. The Aetherites probably could, but then it's like free market. They just have the potential to throw a very gray, amoral wrench into everything. They add a dynamic that would be a lot of fun.
I hadn't considered the whole arms dealer angle, and I'm like, now you're just doing a standard anarcho-capitalism excess thing until you finish the sentence and when you said, and they sell weapons to the traditions. Because to me, that is a remarkably more interesting question than where I thought it was going initially. And I think that's a super interesting direction to go. The key to me about this group is they have a strong, justifiable reason to not trust governments. They point at the hemoclasm of the 20th century, and they point at you either have authoritarian China or the developed world who is incapable of doing anything about climate change. And they say, well, I guess we're on our own. And that is the direction they have taken. The next group I have are the Sons of Hilbert, also known as the Chalmerians. This is a group that believes the universe lacks central coherence, that they think that the inability to perfectly reconcile quantum mechanics and general relativity is a feature, not a bug. That the world is full of predictive theories that are very potent, but are not compatible in basic ways. That to some degree, that there is only a certain percentage of the universe that is explainable. They try and find dissonant fields of investigation and make them work. They spend most of their time with correspondence, prime, entropy, and time. For instance, they may work positing that both space is dividable and subdividable, infinitely subdividable and not infinitely subdividable. And their signature effect is called slipping through the cracks, which is a correspondence 4 effect that by very briefly uncurling hidden dimensions, they can move very quickly from one space to another. And this is a group that might be very good about moving illicit goods or moving information around the world with very little notice, that they may be brokers or middlemen, and maybe they participate in the repatriating of artifacts or something like that. To do this effect, though, it is remarkably tedious in that they need to map all of the intervening space. But the advantage of this is, as opposed to most teleportation, which can kind of result in you exploding into a cloud of blood, they've noticed that with their signature effect, the downside seems to be people getting ill or just kind of feeling out of sorts for a few days thereafter. This was my attempt at coming up with a technomantic group that was good with correspondence. Do you have any thoughts on the Sons of Hilbert?
Yeah, so I'm also looking at your notes, talking about the tend to pop up in strange places, did a small amount of UFO and fringe science investigation, but not a lot. And the thing that I can't help but think about is how much the NWO was inspired by the X-Files. And the standard line is, oh, Mulder was actually an NWO agent the whole time. He was just either an extraordinary citizen or only a one or two Arete mage who was just being manipulated and was actually working for the NWO, even though he thought he was fighting against them. And like, here's a group where you can take the model of like, no, he's against this. And yeah, maybe someone out there is trying to manipulate them, but no, like, he's really actually trying to fight for the hidden truth. And I like there being a space for that. I want to be able to play a Mulder character that works that way and is not secretly just working for the NWO, even though he doesn't know it. The other thing that it struck me about is, have you ever heard of the Quantum Gravity Institute?
No. What is that?
Oh my God. So the Quantum Gravity Institute is pure wackadoodle pseudoscience, but it's magnificently beautiful, fun wackadoodle pseudoscience. And I stumbled across one of their videos on YouTube a year or two ago, and I went, oh my God, this is all perfect mage fodder, but holy crap, they believe this. And it's this whole like weird convergent seeing patterns in physics. We understand what's actually going on with, you know, with quantum reality and gravity and reconciling it, and we're on the right path, and all those mainstream physicists are insane. The video misrepresented what the mainstream consensus is in a lot of ways, which I found fascinating. It's beautifully produced. Don't believe a word of it, but absolutely use it in your mage games. And it's very in line with this group. And I love that little connection.
I wanted to take groups like the Star Council and give them a little more oomph. One of the things that annoyed the dickens out of me is in the book Ascension, you have the character, I think it's Leland Chan or Chen, apologies if I'm getting the last name correctly, who believes themselves to be an alien and were raised in kind of a weird alien cult. And one of the things that bothers me is when Mage makes all bad guys Nefandi and makes all people with wacky and out there ideas marauders.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that either. There are so many shades in between.
The fourth group I have are the Holisticians, or the British Cartographic Society. And my thought exercise here was, I think the secret superpower of Mage the Ascension, since none of our things are like Arete plus manipulation or anything like that, is the fact that we have magic assisting mundane actions and mundane actions assisting magic. And what the British Cartographic Society or the Holisticians do is their goal is to create a whole bunch of tiny effects that create these absolutely massive meta effects, which allow them to create effects where not all members have all spheres, but they are kind of able to form this aggregate mage that is able to do a large effect. This may be something where they will spend a year doing an effect, and that may be to reseed a eastern forest of hemlock, or return an endangered species to the wild, or just improve stormwater management across an entire river basin. I think the rules for Mage kind of break down when you demand an effect that takes 200 successes. And I wanted to have it so that a group could do that. And if this group were selected, I would try and come up with that. But the idea being that as the number of steps in the ritual increases, the odds of botching increase considerably, just because any one of those has to fail for the entire effect to fail. But this is more or less a group that does a lot of their work through large-scale surveying and urban planning to do one or two very large effects in a year. Whereas a group of mages may try and allow a new node to appear, this is a group that would try and create a string of nodes along a river valley or along a row of settlements or old churches or something like that. Each member likely has a sizable cult and retainer background, and most of them would, in my thought, have two sets of spheres, ones that they can use as a group and the ones that they can do on their own. And most of it would be dedicated towards that kind of large group effect. Victor, what do you think about the holisticians?
I really like the idea of the holisticians. I think it taps some of the self-emergent magic cults stuff we were talking about earlier. I don't know if they'd be a great PC group. I think the pace of that would demand a whole chronicle built around that. The thing that it reminds me of, though, is the way magic worked in Ars Magica. And I've never played Ars Magica, but I have played with some mage players who were big fans, and they described it to me, and you worked like in whole seasons. And I could see designing a mage game four mages that worked this way. It would probably play very differently, but it could be very interesting to the tactically minded. But I could also see them being great NPC fodder for these things are happening. How do we stop it? There are so many people involved, and stop it or seek their aid. I could see them playing a number of different NPC roles. Having a contact with this group could be fascinating. I like them. I just think they play a different role than some of the other groups you've talked about.
And I think it's also one of those things where it could be one of those groups, kind of like the Kopaloe, that when you're interfacing with them, you're either dealing with a lone member that's probably a little bit out of their element, or you're very much on their turf. And it doesn't matter what's happening in the rest of the Ascension War. In this particular area, in this little domain, this group holds sway. That there could just be an area of the Sierra Nevada mountains where no one does magic except for this group, because they are just dedicated towards protecting this particular ecosystem that is on the verge of collapse or something like that, or a particular weather system that allows an entire river valley to produce arable cropland or something like that. And in their area, you do not do magic without their blessing. Kind of like what was suggested, I think, in Sorcerer's Crusade with the Ministry of Works, was it, for doing magic in Sorcerer's Crusade era China.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do remember that now. I was thinking Ministry of Works. Where was that? But yes, I do remember the write-up now on that section.
The last two, because it's been a long conversation. These are ones that I only had a very vague idea that this is just kind of a plot thread. One were a group called the Cyber Horses. I need to come up with a better name for that. But basically, the idea is it is a group of spiritual possession practitioners. But the problem is, in modern times, whenever one of the gods rides one of their members, invariably it kills them, or that's the way it's kind of worked. And in the past, they just had a large enough group that was okay to have that sacrifice every once in a while. But this is a group that is trying to come up with technological shells. So now you have essentially materialized spirits running around that are in cybernetic bodies. So we have the idea of a hit mark, but what if a hit mark were taken over by an ancestor spirit of some sort? What would that look like? The other one are the Heirs of Enki, which is a group that believes great technological wisdom is hidden in holy texts. And this is kind of an alternative to the bibliomancy of House Fortunae, but they believe that universal constants, for instance, are laid down within Bible passages or Quranic verses or bits of Talmudic scholarship or something like that. And that the earlier human mind was not refined enough to contain the scientific knowledge that the divine wish to hand off to them, and now they are just scouring world text to find them. And my idea here is I wanted a group that was essentially going National Treasure on old texts to find the scientific wisdom contained therein. Do you have thoughts on either of those two?
I really like the Cyber Horses, but I'm a sucker for taking modern technological paradigm and turning it spiritual, taking an animist eye to very techno sort of stories. I think the AI in cyberpunk speaks to that. I really want there to be a whole chimerical web source book for Changeling. It's like seeded that it exists in a couple books, but I don't think we're ever going to get a real text on it. But this speaks to animism mixed with technology a little bit, maybe a bit more concrete than that idea, but it could lead to that idea. And I think that's really fun. I need to chew on the Heirs of Enki. I like the idea that these old religious texts actually have technologies in them. That kind of speaks to a very Stargate SG-1 kind of story, maybe less grandiose, or heck, it's Mage, maybe more grandiose.
Give us the TLDR on SG-1 if you could.
The elevator pitch for SG-1 is all of the old gods were aliens, not a new idea, but they left behind these artifacts that let you create gateways between different worlds, and all these different worlds have humans from that the gods, these aliens, took from Earth and scattered around. Not a perfect explanation. There's a lot of nuance, and SG-1 fans will scream at me over some of that, but that's like the elevator pitch. And if you took the world hopping out and added some of that, maybe not gods were aliens, but gods were more technological than we think of, there are some similar kinds of stories of going and finding technology in these settings we wouldn't think technology, you'd think old magic. And or maybe even just finding old magic. Speaking of mage, there's no one truth. You find it, it's magic, but you are literally able to engage with it as technology, and you sort of drag it back into consensus by explaining it as technology. And maybe that's what you're quote unquote really doing, because mage and truth, or maybe you really are finding these old technologies. I think, yeah, there are a lot of mage themes that speaks to. I just need to think about how that would play out a little bit more.
Yeah, my thought is if you've ever read about like the history of mathematics, there are often cases where somebody has made a breakthrough, but they literally lack the vocabulary to explain it. There's a running theory of the number of time like Archimedes nearly invented calculus. Where he's just like, well, as the number of sides gets higher and higher, the accuracy of my estimate increases. I wonder what would happen if I did an infinite number of sizes. Ah, that's too weird. I'll skip on that. And you're like, damn it, Archimedes, you were so close. And likewise, cases where you get these long tracks talking about the difference between ratios and quantitations, not realizing that essentially they're the same, but there's just this artificial block separating the two, in the same way that the Babylonians had a strong sense of geometric intuition but didn't think it tied to the world of numbers at all. I like the idea that there were great truths maybe laid down by mages or prophets or something, and the shortcoming was not the sphere knowledge. The shortcoming was literally the ability of how to transfer that knowledge. And maybe that information was put down in grimoires or something millennia ago, but those grimoires have since faded, or maybe haven't. And this is the best we had. And we got what looked like religious texts out the other side, almost like alchemy, but like another step removed. You were mentioning earlier that every group had a bit of technomancer in it in Mage. And historically, in Revised, every tradition got a technomantic group, and every tradition also got a shamanic group during the great explosion of groups in Guide to the Traditions. So my thought here was, instead of taking mystic groups and adding a little bit of technology, what happens if we take technomantic groups and maybe add a little bit of mysticism to it? Where does that come out? And these were some of the groups I came up with. I posited a bunch. You mentioned Occupy Horizon kind of as this mage movement or things that could exist in the world, the advantages that it presents in creating remarkably subtle effects where it's really hard to figure out who's doing it. In a lot of cases, maybe it makes more sense for this to be something that the storyteller uses. Do you have any other thoughts that you'd like to share on kind of alternatives to the technocracy, technomantic magic, or collective magic?
There are some groups that I think have been around for a long time. I live in Chicago, and a couple years ago, I went to the Socialism Conference. There's an annual conference all about socialism here, and I happened to cross an ad for it just a couple days before it happened, and I went, whoa, what is that even going to be about? And I went for pure curiosity. Yes, I am I'm a dirty lefty, but still, I was not prepared for what I walked into. And I think there would absolutely be this very hyper-traditional group that was sort of a counterpoint to the syndicate, a hard counterpoint to the syndicate. And they aren't mystic. There was nothing there that was mystic, but it was clearly a well-organized group that went well beyond Chicago, although there's a root in Chicago because of a lot of history that happened here. And so I would want there to be some group like that. And you know, I know exactly where they would trace themselves back to. They would trace themselves back to, you know, the kind of reducing of the anarchist movement away from propaganda of the deed when they became a little more acceptable. And a lot of them ended up becoming, you know, anarcho-communists, anarcho-socialists, and then more traditional socialists. I want some version of that. And man, you find these people and you see why they're not necessarily winning the big societal argument. But I also think right now there's a space for the hyper-independent maker. And I'll say the Society of Aether kind of fits that mold. Some of the writing I've done for Mage, I do see that connection because I got to work with, you know, what's in the canon. Aetherites are so specific about their beliefs. And I think what's interesting about makers is they're not specific. Everybody is doing something wildly different. And I think just the hyper creative matter forces, maybe some life, especially with CRISPR, you know, oriented, independent, wild, hard sciences kind of group. I think there's definitely a space for that. And I'd love to see that represented. I think the virtual adepts represent a lot of the stuff I want from the internet really nicely, actually. I think they have that pretty well covered, but it's more in these other spaces that I'd really like to see groups that embody that. I don't necessarily have like full names conceptualized for them. They're not as refined as yours, except for maybe the Occupy Horizon. I've been thinking about that one since Occupy happened. But yeah, those are the sorts of things I'd really like to see developed.
And I think the framework that it was presented actually in Victorian Mage, the idea of secret societies, answers that question really well, that you can have a group that doesn't need to have a defined affiliation, that is defined more by practice than by political persuasion that exists in the world. And suddenly you can have a very potent piece on the field that doesn't call fealty to any existent thing. And it isn't just another orphan. And I would love to see an exploration of that in Mage. There's so much space to me for those secret society kind of groups that are either just exploring a practice or they have a political agenda that doesn't line up neatly with any existing Ascension War faction.
And I think that showed up in Victorian because whenever you move into a new era, you end up a little less shackled to the common pre-existing, well, this is the way it is at this time. So I think a lot of these ideas are not unique to me. A lot of people have been writing for Mage, have wanted to do this. That's why there was the shift in M20 to more technomancy, at least even in the crafts, like take a step, don't make it feel totally divorced from the thing that came before. And Victorian, I think, was very much an opportunity to take another step in this direction. And I'm super happy with how that turned out.
So Victor, any projects that you're up to or any events, agendas, or ideas that you want to promote?
Yeah, so the big thing I'd like to promote is Shadowbound, Wraith the Oblivion podcast. It's something that I'm starting with James Sombrano. We have our first episode out. It's a review of the Afterlife Wraith video game. We have a couple other episodes that are going to be coming out right now just because our schedules are completely packed. It's probably only going to be one episode a month, at least for the foreseeable future. We really want to speed that up. But man, finding time to record has been a challenge. So there are episodes coming, and I think if anyone's interested in Wraith the Oblivion, they'll find them pretty fascinating.
Awesome. I've listened to those first two episodes, and Victor and James are two great tastes that taste even better together. And I hope you get a chance to play the Afterlife video game at some point. Victor, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's always wonderful.
And remember, if you're a patron, I will have a poll up for what group that should get a full write-up. Please look on Patreon or our Discord. In the meantime, Mage strong. This has been Mage the Podcast, where we never ask our listeners to be part of a mass ritual without at least providing refreshments. The show is made possible by our executive producers, Anders S., Andrew Adelstein, Andy, Birdo, Boogers to the Sixth, Brad O. the Blue, Brendan Morrill, Bryce Perry, Chris Sack, Dan Svensson, Dennis Osborne, Entropy _ Prime, Freddy, Gargoyle Noir, Guy Conan Stewart, Ian, Isabella Castillo, Jason Kennedy, Jason W. Biggs, Jason Cern, Jeff Watt, Jenna F., John Horton, John Magnuson, Josh Golden, Josh Hillerup, Josh Heath, Carl Halperin, Leslie Weatherstone, Michael Creedle, Michael Parker, Nibero, Neil Patterson, Nikita Klamenoff, Ralph Scheinhammer, Richard Bat Brewster, Ryan Hilton, Ryan Kendi, Samuel Tobin, Stephen Carton, William Connolly, William Martin, and W. Starter. Special thanks to Oracle supporters Christopher Phillips, Oracle of a particular type of plaid that's surprisingly difficult to find but is all the rage this year, and Buck Farmer, Oracle of quadrangle maps, which are deeply satisfying when mounted and framed appropriately. Our EP shout-out this week is to Guy Conan Stewart, who I know nothing about, but I found anagrams within your name including aeronauts, orangutans, greyouts, uncreates, tonnages, unreason, wagoneers, cyanogens, youngster, watergun, sugarcoat, non-greasy, negatrons, agastora, cougars, and actuary. Thanks for the support. If you super liked this episode or super didn't, drop us a line at magesthepodcast@gmail.com or at magesthepodcast on Twitter. We have a Hop in Discord community at discord.me/magesthepodcast. If you like this, please give us a review on the platform of your choosing or tell a friend. Also go to magesthepodcast.com for show notes and all of our previous shows. Now go change reality. Bye.